Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Scott Jones is a young musician just back in Canada after a stint abroad. He's giving music lessons in small town Nova Scotia when something terrible happens. He's brutally attacked by a stranger and left to die, but he doesn't die. He comes back with a new mission to use music to tell Canadians about the real life consequences of homophobia. Despite his disability, he conducts a full choir to tell his story and spread the love. And he's the subject of a new, deeply personal documentary made by a close friend he met in music school. It's the story of hatred and loss that leads to love and rebirth. The NFB doc is called Love, Scott. It's directed by Laura Marie Wayne's It's director Laura Marie Wayne's first film. It's showing at Toronto's Hot Docs Documentary Film Festival and again at the Inside Out LGBT Film Festival. And I'm very pleased to have both Scott and Laura here in studio to tell us more about their new film, Love, Scott. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
This is a tender and loving film about community and family, but it has a violent act at its core. Laura, can you talk about what happened to you when you heard about this and what was your response?
So Scott and I had been friends for about a decade before he was attacked. And at the time, I was going to film school in Cuba. And as you know, Cuba is pretty cut off from Canadian news. But my so I was totally unaware that Scott had been attacked. And then my mom was able to get a hold of me and told me over the phone. And it was just, I was devastated. It was like I've never had any experience in my life like that of such intense emotion, like really a lot of rage and devastation. And pretty quickly, I knew I needed to get to Halifax to see Scott. And so I bought a plane ticket to go from Havana to Halifax. And somewhere in there, there was this intuition that I needed to bring my camera. And so that's sort of how the whole journey began, was that I flew to see him and brought the camera with me to the hospital. And then things evolved from there.
In your mind, did you have a nascent feeling of a documentary sprouting up? Or?
Well, I mean, I was in film school and I work exclusively with documentary films. So I'm sure it must have been there subconsciously, but I didn't go there with the intention of we're going to make a documentary. It was more like I understood the camera just needed to be there. Like the camera was somehow going to be a powerful witness to this process. And there was a sense that there could be some kind of justice or even catharsis by bringing this tool along with me.
So if you could pick up the story from there, what was your feeling seeing her with the camera?
Relief in a way. I knew that time in my life was going to be quite blurry, and it was just so chaotic that I knew bits were going to be lost. So I was happy to see her first and foremost, and then also happy that she brought her camera. And yeah,
this is radio, so people can't see, but you do use a wheelchair to get around now, and you have paralysis of your legs from the waist down. Think back to that period. Was there a time where it suddenly sank in your disability? And what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think the first 24 hours, it was quite surreal and felt like it just wasn't reality. And there was a moment in the hospital when my older sister, who was like the rock of the family, she broke down as the doctor told me that I probably wouldn't be able to walk again. And that was, yeah, so that was maybe, I guess, 14 hours after I'd been attacked. And that was when it all really started to sink in, that this was really happening. And, but yeah, since that point, I think there's been moments of disbelief and acceptance all swirling around.
Do you ever have that? I think it's called the imposter syndrome, where you think, they say I can't walk, but actually I can. I just can't tell. Do you ever have that feeling?
No, I can't say that.
Okay,
I have.
Okay. Some people talk about that.
Oh.
At the same time, footage in the film shows you conducting a choir, and you're using your arms, your whole body, your mouth. It's as if you're like taking up twice the space as you normally would. Is there any positive aspects you can think of your new sense of self?
I mean, it absolutely, in terms of discovering parts of yourself that you didn't know were there. And I think anyone goes through this with any kind of loss, and this is a type of grief. And I think people who lose loved ones or, you know, have to leave their country, that's a type of loss, and you grow and you learn more about who you are. So that's a positive for sure. Yeah. I wasn't worried about losing conducting because that was music, such a big part of my life. And thankfully, conducting really just requires your arms.
And your voice and your face.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Everything above the waist.
Yeah. Talk about conducting. You talk about conducting choir.
What would you like to know?
What's it like? What are you trying for when you conduct? What is your aim?
I mean, for me, it requires about community and connection, and the performance is a big part, but what leads up to it is also really important, and the environment that you nurture as a conductor is, for me, is the most important part, one of love and respect.
Laura, you also went to music school together. When I look at your film, the first thing I thought of, oh, it's a book divided into chapters. But I thought, you know, this could also be thought of like maybe a symphony with different movements. Can you tell in this film, what is the adagio? What's the allegro? could you picture it that way?
Yeah. To me, each of the chapters represents a sort of different emotional state of Scott and of the film. And so in the first chapter, we're very much in it's definitely a chapter of grief where we're exploring the loss, but it's also a chapter of shock, you know, mm-hmm. like there's, we need to lay out the facts of what happened. But I don't think we get into the deep understanding of the way this sort of rippled through Scott's life and through his inner world until a little bit later. And then in our second movement, let's call it, things kind of pick up, and it opens with the initiative that Scott started, Don't Be Afraid, and this sort of forward momentum of I'm going to make change and spread this beautiful message. And then throughout that chapter, we sort of have, ups and downs. And then by the time we get to the third, what would you call that? It's like, I don't know. For me, the third chapter is very much about healing. And it's kind of subdued and open in a way, you know, because I don't think that the film leaves us with one particular feeling or conclusion. And that's something that even today, after having seen it, I don't know how many times, I get to the end and there's a feeling that I have that's kind of indescribable. Like I'm so deeply touched, but I can't quite articulate exactly where I'm left.
Mm-hmm. Earlier in the movie, in early parts of the movie, Scott, we have you, is it your sister? Mm-hmm. You're just singing a song, just a cappella with your sister. Later, I think, there's you practicing, rehearsing with the choir. And finally, later on, you have the finished product of everyone singing together. I think it was Joni Mitchell's...
Both Sides Now.
Both Sides Now, yeah. Can you talk about how it feels to you to go through the process of taking a piece of music and turning it into a performance?
It's a long process. Well, it depends on the piece, but definitely with that piece, it was a long process because that's a really hard one. And we had a small group of singers.
Who were these singers and where was this?
Oh, just friends in Halifax who came together.
Good voices. Huh?
Really good voices.
Yeah.
And yeah, leading up to that event, there was long rehearsals and it wasn't just a choir performance. We were talking about social issues, queer perspectives. So we had to invite in a speaker who was speaking beforehand, a trans woman, before that piece of music and hear her story and then connect her story to the lyrics so that we had a deeper understanding of it. So there are many moving parts and, when you get to a concert like that, you just pray that it all comes together and it did, thankfully.
There's a legal term, actus reus and mens rea, and that says guilt depends not just on the act, but also the mind of the actor, the criminal. A major theme in the movie is your opinion or your
experiences,
specifically about hate crime. Can you talk about what you would like to see and what was dealt with or wasn't dealt with in the course of your trial?
Yeah. I think this film has tremendous potential to bring about change because Laura has done such a beautiful job of conveying my personal experience and my truth and what I believe happened. And my hope is that when people watch that, they will understand that I'm not a statistic. I'm a person and this has affected me. The fact that the police, I believe, did not investigate the hate crime aspect to the fullest extent, that the legal system, he wasn't charged with a hate crime. Attempted murder was good enough for them. And I hope that people realize that is a crucial component in order to identify me as an individual in all of this, as a gay individual, and also in order to bring about change and learning.
So the problem isn't with the laws that we already have, it's the application of the laws by the police or by the
Absolutely.
Legal authorities?
Yeah, so in 1996, the criminal code was amended to include sexual orientation as a grounds for discrimination. So from that time on, it is now possible to charge hate crime. But since that time, even though there have been thousands of hate crimes reported by the queer community, there have been only a handful of cases where there was actually a charge that acknowledged sexual orientation. So the law is there, but it's not being used. And then there's a few levels in the system where the queer community is being let down in terms of like police not taking the claim seriously, maybe not having the right tools to investigate, just simply not understanding that that part of the crime is important to investigate. And it's like if the police don't bring forth evidence, then you can't even have anything in the courtroom to be discussed. So then you don't have a chance to have the charge applied. So there's a number of places in which these stories are falling through the cracks.
And like you can see it's very pertinent right now with the Bruce MacArthur case and over a decade of the queer community screaming to the police, we have a serial killer in our community and people are missing, and that being dismissed, that's a perfect example.
So what would you like to see happen? Big question, but...
No, it sort of related to what I said. Like, I think we need to analyze hate crime laws and how they are helping or not helping. In this case, not helping, not supporting all these claims from the queer community.
Yeah, and I think that we need to have... I think we need to start with conversation that gives importance to the experience of queer individuals and let that inform police practice and policy.
Thanks so much for talking with me. Scott Jones is the subject and Laura Marie Wayne, the director of the new NFB documentary, Love, Scott. Look for it at the Hot Docs and Inside Out Film Festivals in Toronto. This is Daniel Garber, the movies each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and at my website, culturalmining.com.